You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast, presented by our partners at BetMGM. Go to BetMGM.com to place your bets and be where the action is. Ryan, I say it every time, but it really is the best time of the year.
We are here.
We are. This is what we do it for.
That's right.
You know, this is we have the Stanley Cup Final locked, set, ready to rock. Yeah. And I know people are talking about, oh, maybe not traditional markets. I think this is going to be an extremely entertaining series.
I do too, because I look at these two teams and how they got to where they are, and you know, I see some similarities. I think there's going to be some really great matchups, and I think obviously, you know, whoever dictates the tone, that's going to be big. But I can't definitively say I know what's going to happen.
No.
And I think that's what you want.
I like we're obviously going to preview it all and break it down and everything. I like, and so this might be stepping on it, but I do not have like a gut feeling of who's gonna come out on top. Mm. I really do think and either team could, and that's what we love. Like last year was one of my favorite Cup Finals ever, not just because we were there, but like it was I think definitively like the two best teams in the league, just like two just Greek gods slinging it at each other on Mount Olympus.
Yes.
You know, whereas this year it's like these two, like I don't want to say they're both underdogs, but like they really are like two sort of like scrappy underdogs. One is putting together maybe like the greatest Cinderella story we've ever seen, and the other is an expansion team that, you know, in 6 years they'd be in the league. This is now their second trip to the Cup Final, and they're doing it with, you know, after making these huge moves, taking a lot of criticism for how they built their roster and just like the commodification of the players. But I think it's gonna be remarkable. But Ryan, before we get into that. Mm-hmm. You know, the losers have to have their say as well. You know, and I like to refer to the other 30 teams who didn't make it as the losers, because they are. And so we have two coaching hires today.
Yeah.
Let's start with the Washington Capitals, who, funnily enough, were the team that bounced the Golden Knights in that first trip to the Cup Final.
Right.
But they kind of did, I would say, the obvious thing. The prodigal son has returned, in that they have hired Spencer Carberry, who won the Coach of the Year coaching Hershey, their AHL affiliate, back in 2021, and has then spent the last two years as an assistant for the Leafs. They have hired him as, I believe, the 19th head coach in franchise history. What do we think of this?
Yeah, I like it. This is something we've discussed on the podcast before, that Carberry was a pretty natural fit for the Caps. He knows the organization. Mm-hmm. He knows some of the young players already, obviously, with his time from Hershey. Getting experience at the NHL level with Toronto obviously helps as well. It's the kind of guy that, you know, when you're building an organization, this is what you want. You want to, it's not just developing players, it's also developing talent off the ice.
Yeah.
And whether that's an assistant coach that becomes the head coach, whether it's an assistant GM that becomes the GM, you know, I think it's a good sign for the Capitals that they were able to nurture that talent. And then, yeah, you know, he went away for a couple of years. But, you know, Spencer Carberry, this was somebody that, like I said, I had my eye on him for a while now, and it felt like Washington, you know, when the time was right, should kind of be his for the taking, and now it has come true. So now it's a matter of, I think, what are Washington's priorities, and what is their timeline for getting back to Stanley Cup contender status. You know, they did win the one cup, and they still have Alex Ovechkin, and they still have some great veteran talent there, but do they need a bit of a reset first? Do they take another step back in order to take a step forward in 2 years? That obviously is up to the Caps brass, but they've got their guy behind the bench now.
Yeah, I mean, look, we know now that the Capitals like to, maybe not explicit because he did go somewhere else, but like promote from within, get known commodities, because after Trotz left, they then promoted assistant coach Todd Reirden. to that top job. And now after Laviolette left, they go back to a guy who most recently coached their minor league system, did it well. And I think I told the story on a different podcast, not a groundbreaking story or anything, but like I remember when the when like in January or something, when the Capitals came to town to the Leafs, basically like after morning skate, you know, you talk to Sheldon Keefe or you talk to the coach, whatever. And the traveling media for the Capitals, like we all asked our, you know, our questions. They spent like literally half of that press conference asking Keith just about Spencer Carberry, mm-hmm. you know, who was, you know, obviously behind the Leafs bench at the time. But yeah. like, and obviously I don't think that they were taking, you know, directions from ownership or management, but like he has always been sort of like, and even at the time, I think they were, you know, because this was right before the Capitals really sort of fell out of contention. But I think they'd always had their eye on him. The market mm-hmm. had always had their eye on him. He's coached, like he's proven, because what really happened here is like Laviolette, he's known for not maybe being the best with young players. Like he's one of those coaches that you install into like a team that's right on the cusp to get them over.
Toronto.
Oh boy. Yeah, exactly. But like he's, you know, you're right. And so all that, but like when it comes to a team that, you know, is maybe on the either on the upswing or is like trying to retool, he might not be the best because he doesn't have a lot of faith in young players. He's very much a veterans coach. Mm. He's a lot like Gerard Gallant, really, in that sense. Whereas Carberry, on the other hand, you know, he has all this experience, not just coaching prospects, but coaching their prospects
right.
and developing them. So I think it's a great fit. I think he turned the Leafs power play. I mean, obviously, when you have the firepower that they do, the expectation is to be good. Mm. But you still need to put those results. And he turned them into the second best power play in the league over the 2 years he was there. It's a great hire. I mean, now he's working on the power play with Alex Ovechkin. So he's already stepping in to the fold with a nuclear bomb.
That's right.
So there you go. Pretty good. The second coaching, I guess, swap really that happened was the Nashville Predators, who decided to flip the script here, relieve coach John Hines of his duties after parts of four seasons with the team. And now they brought in, it seemed like he was destined to get a coaching job somewhere, considering, you know, what he'd been doing the last couple of years, Andrew Brunette, who was a former Predators forward.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because I thought Andrew Brunette got a bit of a raw deal in
Absolutely.
Florida. And then I will say it feels like John Hines is getting a bit of a raw deal in Nashville.
Yeah.
Although, as soon as this news came down, you heard other markets saying, well, maybe John Hines is a fit for the Rangers. Mm-hmm. You know, he has familiarity with Chris Drury. They played together at one point. So I hope John Hines lands on his feet because mm-hmm. he did a great job with Nashville this year. You know,
yeah.
this was a team that we thought were completely dead in the water, and they had an excellent second half, even though they were sellers at the deadline.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They lose Matthias Ekholm
yeah.
and you know, still make a run.
And Tanner Janot.
And Tanner Janot.
Yeah.
Who, you know, I mean.
The big fish.
Calder-worthy in his first year.
Yeah.
He was, you know, in the mix there.
He had an entire draft class of picks traded for him, so he must be good.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do hope John Hines, you know, lands on his feet with an NHL gig because I think he deserves it. But having said that, you know, Andrew Brunette has proven in a short amount of time mm-hmm. that he has what it takes to really get the most out of a team. You know, he took over a Florida team that was obviously in sort of controversial flux at the
yeah.
time. It was not ideal circumstances for him to take over behind the bench, but he made it work. And I'm very interested to see, you know, Barry Trotz coming in as the GM in Nashville. You know, I guess you want your own guy. And
yes.
I understand
yeah.
that. So it'll be interesting to see what Brunette does with that Nashville lineup. It'll also be interesting to see what that Nashville lineup looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I would say they've been a good team, but not like a serious contender lately. So, again, like, do you tread water in the West? Do you... you know, try to take another step forward? Do you take a step back in order to take another step forward, kind of like the Washington Capitals?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be an interesting summer to see what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, like you said, you know, now that Trotz, he's taken over that GM post, regardless of what direction they go, whether they move forward, whether they decide to tread water if they're dumb, or if they want to go back, at least now, like, given that he's the one who hired him, there will be a cohesion, a group sort of mentality on what direction they're going. Just a note on John Hines, like my co-host on Staff and Graph, Rachel Dory, she worked with the at the Devils, or for the Devils when Hines was there, and has nothing but incredible things to say about him.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently he's one of the best people in hockey.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully he lands on his feet there. But yeah, look, This is the first, head coaching gig that Brunette's getting that doesn't have an interim tag on it. Mm-hmm. And the one time he was behind a bench, he led a team to the President's Trophy. And also, and this is important to mention, that that team, still to this day, was the most lethal offensive team by goals per game in the salary cap era.
There you go.
I believe they were the only team of the salary cap era to average over 4 goals per game. So he knows how to do it. And then he went to New Jersey, and yes, he wasn't the head coach, but he was the top assistant there,
yeah.
And helped lead that team to become one of the most potent offensive and just like well-structured groups in the league. So I think he's got some great sort of credentials, mm-hmm. or some even just recent success. He clearly knows the modern game. Yeah. He knows how to construct a modern, fast-paced, possession-heavy East-West. I think that's what the Predators need, because they've had a lot of coaches that seem to buy into the old, you know, like Barry Trotz, like sort of plodding Nashville Predators, no dynamic offensive. Now you have Brunette, who, like, you know, under his watch, Barkov had career seasons, Huberdeau set the single season assist record for a left wing. You know, all these amazing things happened. I think he's a great fit.
Yeah, and you know, if you think about Nashville, the thing we've said sort of historically is like, oh, if only they could score more.
Yes.
Because they've always had like the best defenseman in the league. They've always mm-hmm. had great goaltending. Maybe it's just sort of a new tack now where they say, okay, well, we've got UC Saros in net. We feel very safe mm-hmm. that if we play a little more risky, even if we give up more odd man rushes, we've got a guy back there that can bail us out. Mm-hmm. What we need is to be scoring 3 or 4 goals a game yeah. instead of 2 or 3.
You know who I'm excited to see in an Andrew Brunette system? It's Tyson Barry.
Yeah.
I'm actually excited to see that, because I feel like an Andrew Brunette system will lend more to the type of game that Tyson Barry, they won't try and force him to be someone he's not.
Sure.
He might just let him cook. And I think that's very good. All right, so the losers are being handled. They're out of the way.
That's right.
Let's talk about the winners. Let's talk about the Stanley Cup Final. We got the Florida Panthers, the Vegas Golden Knights. Incredible matchup. Who do you want to start with, Ryan?
Well, let's start with the Florida Panthers.
Let's do it.
Since they've been waiting the longest.
They have.
Yeah, and I mean, at this point, it's pretty obvious, you know, Sergei Bobrovsky has been mm-hmm. giving a historical performance in net for them. Matthew Tkachuk has been amazing
for
them.
A superstar.
Just a superstar. And, I mean, up and down the lineup, you know, you look at Sasha Barkov, and, you know, he's the captain, but just the way he's been playing on the ice, you really see him using his size. It just felt like Carolina had and you know, Carolina's a great team, but they just really had a hard time getting a beat on him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I look at guys like Sam Bennett and Sam Reinhart, and, you know, we've said this before, it's just like, it's a nasty lineup to
play against,
you know? Nick Cousins, and then, like, on the back end, you know, Radko Gudas, and, you know, Aaron Ekblad's a big dude, and, you know, Mark Stahl's been playing really well during this run. So, for me, you know, Florida, they certainly know who they are right now. They know how they want to win.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And I think that's very important for a team, is to say, this is, you know, they're not reacting to what the opponent does. They're saying, this is how we play.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get on you fast. We're going to be aggressive. And our goaltender is on a heater like few have ever seen before. So that's our strategy. If we win every game 2-1 or even 1-0,
we're cool with that.
We're totally fine with that. So, I mean, that's the upshot for the Panthers. I mean, the downside is that Bobrovsky turns into a pumpkin. And maybe there's a little rust in game 1 because of the time off. Those would be that's sort of like the the glass half empty scenario.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, everything else really tilts in their favor in terms of being prepared to be a very potent opponent for the Golden Knights.
No, absolutely. And what's interesting too is you say, like, you know, they might be rusty with the time off, but keep in mind, this is a team that played a 5-0 OT game. Like,
very true.
Like, this is, great, by the way, not to give a plug to another network here, but like what ESPN does, you know, with they have this Quest for the Cup series where it's behind the scenes with all the teams that are in the playoffs at the time. And, you know, and there was one about that game. And I have never seen hockey players like as dead tired. Like they're like lying down on the floor after the game. They are just like, you know that picture of Olli Juolevi after the Canucks endurance skate in training camp where he's just like crumpled in like the fetal position? That's like what they're all like. Yeah. And so as much as in normal circumstances, yes, they've had like a almost like a week off really before we get started. But I think that for a team that, you know, is as like they're pretty old. This is like, you know, they have like at least they're at least a lot of their like their high sort of octane players up front are like either 30, they're approaching 30, they're on the other side of 30. So I think this will be good for them. One thing too is that, you know, I've been looking through, you know, in preparation of this podcast, I was looking through all the stats and whatnot. The biggest, like, if we could, you know, we all know that the Conn Smythe for, you know, playoff MVP. If anyone says it's Tkachuk over Bobrovsky, you're straight up wrong. But I think we should have like a secret weapon award or like a underappreciated award because Gustav Forsling, not a soul is talking about that man. This guy is playing top pairing minutes. He's averaging almost 27 minutes of ice time a night. Incredible. And I know plus minus is not the best stat just because, you know, like whatever. But in a sample size like this, I think it's important. He's a plus nine. When you're playing 27 minutes a night, like which is basically half the game in regulation, and you're on for nine more goals than you are on goals for than against, you are putting an incredible, like you are helping and putting a just a remarkable effort into helping your team win. Like you are a big force in that. No, not a soul is talking about Gustav Forsling. We're talking about Brandon Montour, who's having a great offensive playoffs. You know, like even Mark Stahl, who's showing that he can, you know, still play NHL hockey. Radko Gudas, who's being, you know, like basically the enforcer, you know, the boogeyman for any forwards. You know, Aaron Ekblad, who's recovered, you know, who came back from being injured and is doing great. Not a soul's talking about Gustav Forsling. We need to talk more about him because he's a waiver pickup that they got. They picked him up on waivers. And he's playing phenomenal.
Sounds like you have a blog for
Florida. You know exactly what my Media Day blog is going to be now. Yep, exactly. But yeah, no, this is great. Now, basically, as you said and as you mentioned, the X factor here is Bobrovsky.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. For Sergei.
And no, but like what's interesting too is we saw last year in the Cup final that you can win a Stanley Cup with either average or slightly below average goaltending. Because the Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup in six games, no less, like pretty definitively, over the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions with Pavel Francouz, or Francouz, and Darcy Kemper with one eye.
Yeah.
So is Sergei Bobrovsky, like let's say he's not stopping 14 goals above average that he has before. Yeah. Let's say he dips down to five. Do you think the Panthers are still in a good enough position to not just like compete, but potentially win?
I think so, but they might have to play a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. And that would be interesting because, and, you know, to sort of segue into Vegas.
Let's do it.
Vegas can burn you on turnovers and odd man rushes.
Well, it's funny because we talked about last podcast. Sorry, not to interrupt you, but like this is the most. Florida seems to be the most opportunistic team in the league.
Right.
I would say Vegas is a close second.
For sure. So if you look at, you know, Florida, you know, playing that great structure, and you know the Panthers being so good at turning other teams' mistakes into their own opportunities. You know, if Bobrovsky's not the human wall that he has been, then you know if you're Florida, are you taking a few more risks? And what does that do to your overall system? I mean, maybe they just say, hey, this is us, and we'll continue to grind. Or maybe they have to start chasing the play a bit more, which I think we probably saw with Dallas in Game 6, and that did not go very well for them.
No.
Vegas absolutely trampled them. I think that's one of the big sort of subplots here is, you know, who wins the turnover battle, and also, you know, who wins the middle of the ice. You know, this is something that I think both teams did very well so far. Florida, in particular, it's very difficult for teams to get in through their defense. Mm-hmm. And then Vegas, you know, same, very good. And, you know, I mean, Joe Pavelski, actually, you know, like he was pretty limited in terms of success against Vegas, even though he was great in the playoffs before that. And I think that's a testament to how Vegas defends. But also, Vegas really cut through the Dallas defense. And again, especially in Game 6, where A lot of odd man rushes, a lot of like driving to the net where the Stars just couldn't stop them. So to me, that's going to be a super fun game within the game, mm-hmm. is who can control the middle of the ice in the offensive zone. If Vegas can pierce that Panthers defense, then yes, Bobrovsky's going to be huge as he has been, you know, the whole time here. But what does that dynamic mean for the series? And I think that's going to be a great battle. And then as for, you know, the Golden Knights just in general,
yeah,
I think it's fun because I see sort of like two groupings in Vegas. One is like you've got the old guard, you've got the originals.
The OGs, yeah.
The OGs, Marchessault, Smith, Carlson. Yeah. You know, guys that are always on the right side of the puck.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you do that, good things happen. And we've seen some great opportunistic goal scoring from them. And even guys like Keegan Kolesar, for that matter, coming through when they need it in the most. And then you have what I like to call the ringers, Mark Stone and Jack Eichel, the guys that they've brought in more recently that had the star power.
And Pietrangelo.
Pietrangelo as well.
He's a star defenseman.
Certainly is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at least offensively with Eichel and Stone, both of them have been so good.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, it's so fun to see what Jack Eichel has been able to do with a great supporting cast. And, you know, when not everything's on him, which has obviously been in the case in the past. In Buffalo, you know, he was like the number two overall pick right by McDavid. There was a lot of pressure. And then even, you know, last year coming to Vegas where he got there and everybody else was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's like he can flourish in these circumstances, and we've seen him do exactly that. Whereas Mark Stone, a player who's seen more success in the past, but so smart, so good with his stick, just, you know, interrupting plays, you know, creating offense as well.
The perfect playoff player, it seems.
Perfect playoff
player. Like, his game is just molded for the tight chess battles of the playoffs.
Exactly, because he's never been a fast guy.
Yes.
We know that, but he makes up for it with all his other traits, and he's super intense as well, which is part of what makes him a great leader.
Absolutely.
So you have these two factions working together, and what we've seen is just this great sort of cohesive group getting, you know, excellent net minding from Adin Hill. And, you know, we talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
Not the biggest name that Vegas has ever had in their crease, but the guy getting the job done at the right time. And you can't really ask for anything more.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned Adin Hill. And I think, you know, okay, I look at the three series that the Panthers played, right? Like, you know, basically the three sort of pillars of their run. And I go, okay, well, They were playing, you know, when Bobrovsky really took hold, because he took hold, I think it was like, what, game three of the first round?
Yeah.
And so I think from there, when he was, you know, sort of like writing his tapestry, incredible narrative, like he gave the Panthers the edge in every series.
Yeah.
He would, like, when he took over, Linus Allmark was like on one leg, basically.
Yeah.
And then Jeremy Swayman was coming in totally cold. They were able to rally around the fact that they had the best goaltender in the series, potentially in the league, and they were like, and they could take risks, they could push the play, and they knew that Sergei would back them up. Mm. Then you go into Toronto, and it's the same thing. Ilya Samsonov clearly playing with an injury, clearly battling, then he goes down, you get a completely untested rookie in net. They knew Sergei's going to bail us out. We can murder this other team. We can go for it, absolutely.
Yeah.
Then you go into the third round, and we don't even know who Carolina's goalie is.
Right.
They're basically doing like one-on, one-off,
yeah.
Right? So they knew, okay, we're rallying around our goalie. He's having a crazy Cinderella run. The vibes are immaculate. Like, this is great. You go into Vegas now,
mm-hmm.
like, they don't have that anymore. They don't have that. Like, obviously, not saying that Bobrovsky's not good, but on the other side of the spectrum, they have like a mini Bobrovsky.
Right.
Like Adin Hill, people like, yes, we gave him his flowers, as you want to say, as the kids say, last episode. But I think it's important, considering that he just shut out the Dallas Stars in an elimination game, that we do it again. Adin Hill has a .932 save percentage in 10 appearances. He stopped 8.2 goals above average in eight starts. He is giving them, like, Bobrovsky is on like it's literally the second best goaltending stretch since they started tracking advanced stats, but Adin Hill's very close. He gives the Golden Knights some of that magic that Bobrovsky's giving the Panthers, the ability to be like, this guy came, I mean, Bobrovsky didn't really come out of nowhere, but improbable to rally around to give them sort of like this security. And I think that's a big thing because, as I said, in all these other series, the Panthers have had that magic in their pocket. Like they've had that, they've had the ability to rally around that, use that narrative to their advantage. They don't have that anymore. They have their opponent now has their own mini Cinderella story, their mini Bobrovsky.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. I think that's like they haven't faced a team in the playoffs with a goalie A at full health and B firing on all cylinders, and now they are. And I wonder how they will react to that if Adin Hill continues up, because we've seen how other teams just crumble at the sight of they have a million grade A scoring chances and Bobrovsky just stops all of them.
Yeah.
And they do the real life version of throwing their controller through drywall, basically,
right,
or smacking themselves in the face so hard that it ruptures their eardrum, like someone who will not be named has done. I wonder how they'll react if potentially, and if things go this way, they will be on the opposite side of that.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes this a fascinating matchup is, you know, at this point, it's like, yeah, we're not going to underestimate Florida anymore. We know that they obviously earned their way here by beating three of the best teams in the entire NHL on this run. So now you get into a different scenario where, you know, and I'm sure in the Florida dressing room, they're saying, nobody believes in us.
Oh, every good team. Dude, the Patriots were doing that at the
end
of the like, everyone has
to
do that.
Nobody thinks we can do it. And hey. Do it. Do what you got to do because, I mean, you're going for a title. I'm not going to knock it.
Yeah.
The stakes are so much lower for me.
Yes.
Just observing and writing.
Personally.
Personally.
There's nothing on the line for me. I'm just enjoying it.
That's true. Whoever wins, I'm writing about it.
I hope both teams have fun. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah,
let's 100%. Just have fun out there. But, you know, at this point, like, they're not going to surprise anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights, I mean, the stakes can't be any higher. Neither team has won a Stanley Cup before. It's their first, you know,
third time this century, I believe, that that's going to happen, where there will be a guaranteed first-time cup winner.
Which is super fun. I love that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Vegas is going to come in, like, eyes wide open. Everybody knows what Bobrovsky's done so far.
Mm.
You know, they know what they're going to face in terms of a Panthers forecheck. I think it's going to be a very physical series, which is very fun.
You better believe it, yeah.
Because, you know, we mentioned all those Panthers, you know, Tkachuk, Bennett, you know, Gudas, like all those guys, Cousins. But then on the Vegas side, you have Keegan Kolasar. You know, you have Nick Hague, who is like 6'6", I think, 6'5".
Petrangelo tried to amputate Leon Draisaitl's arm, like, a couple weeks ago.
It
wasn't that long ago.
It wasn't that long ago. So, you know, I mean, Vegas can hold court there. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to push back. So I'm very, very intrigued by this series to see who gets to establish their will and for how long. Does it become a short series where one team locks in and finds their lane? Or do we see a series that just kind of seesaws where, you know, somebody getting hot one game or getting cold another game really makes the difference, where the structure doesn't play as much of a factor, or, you know, the structure fails in one case and the other team takes advantage.
Yeah, and I guess before we head into rapid fire, personally, selfishly, I just want to say, I'm hoping, because we'll both be there, that we get a Phil Kessel appearance in the Stanley Cup Final, because he hasn't, you know, he has been healthy scratch since either the first round or the second round, I can't imagine which, but he is, as I've said, my favorite player of all time. He's nice. The reason why my Twitter handle is Mikey Stevens 81. I cannot change it now. So it's kept there, just like how my old email address was mikey22goldmachine@hotmail.com.
Nice.
That is deactivated. Do not email that address. But I just love it, and I think it would be so cool, because we don't know what's going to happen. Like, Kessel's old. Yes, he still has the Iron Man streak, but, like, well, now, we don't know what's going to happen. It would be cool for him to get, I would love for him to get an appearance, and I would love for him to just get one last cup.
Yep.
Before he rides off into his single seat home movie theater, that is the dream that I've always wanted in my entire life.
Right.
I love him. I hope he gets there. It'd be great.
Nice.
All right, rapid fire, Ryan.
Do we want to do predictions first?
Oh, yes. Sorry. Yes. Oh, my goodness. What kind of host am I? So let's do predictions. Who takes it? How many games? And Conn Smythe.
Oh, and Conn Smythe. Okay.
Yes.
I'm going to say Florida in 7, and I'm going to say. I'm going to say Bobrovsky. I want to say Tkachuk, but it feels like it's just, if they win, then Bobrovsky is going to, like, have to play well enough that he'll get it.
So I'm going to say something outrageous.
Good.
I'm going Vegas in 7.
Okay.
But for Conn Smythe, I'm going Sergei Bobrovsky.
Not crazy.
I think he's pulling. I think, pulling like
a,
you said,
a J.S. Jaguar.
Yes, I think there will be a lot of like 2-1, 1-0 games. Mm-hmm. A very like chess match type series.
Yep.
I think Bobrovsky will continue to stand on his head, and it will be at the point where we're going, we cannot, like, Jack Eichel's a point per game, over a point per game.
Yeah.
You know, Matthew Tkachuk's over a point, whatever, but like he lost, and I think they will, I think they will pull a J.S. Jaguar, because this is the closest I think we're ever going to get. Yeah. To that type of run again. So I'm saying Vegas in 7. Mm-hmm. I do think Vegas takes this. Yeah. I really don't have a rooting interest in either team. I'm rooting for an incredible stretch of hockey because this is like the lifeblood of what we do.
Yeah.
But I do think that Sergei Bobrovsky, if he continues this, and I think he will, it's gonna make history.
All right, I like it.
Pretty cool. All right, rapid fire, Ryan.
Yes.
So I only have like 2 questions here, but I'll start off with this one. So and it's interesting how to phrase this. What is one thing that society or like, you know, culture, whatever, is like super gung-ho on these days that you just cannot get behind?
Oh, okay, yeah. All the Real Housewives shows.
Real? Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess that one's a little obvious, but I'll throw another one out there that, and maybe it's just because, like, I come from, like, a punk rock background, and this is weird to me, is, like, the wide demographic of Taylor Swift fans.
Yeah.
Which seems to include a lot of hockey writers. Like, I feel like she's like the new Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
Where, like, a wide swath of hockey writers love Taylor Swift. And for me, it's like, yeah, like, she's good at what she does. But it's like, y'all don't want some edge? Like, you know?
I have a theory as to why hockey writers like Taylor Swift.
Hit me.
I used to be a huge Taylor Swift fan just because I was, you know, starting to like girls when I was getting older, and she was very pretty.
Sure.
She still is. But I think it's because she's such a great songwriter.
Okay.
I think that we appreciate like the lyricism and the storytelling of her songs, because it's true. Like literally, her songs are almost like friggin' MCU movies. Like they're like Easter eggs in her songs.
Right.
There are like fan theories about who she's referring to in her songs. There are like, you know, like narrative arcs that are continued from one album to another. Mm. So it's almost like a Harry Potter book where people are like waiting to see how the story continues. So I can see that, like, is it a little overblown these days?
Mm.
Maybe. But I do think that that as like hockey writers specifically or journalists specifically, I think they respect her for the songwriting. I think they really enjoy it.
Fair enough.
I think so. Okay. For me, and this might be, this might not be the best thing considering that our partner is BetMGM, but for me it's gambling. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because I have horrible luck.
Uh-huh.
I'm so lucky that I get to work this job and like travel and do all this stuff. It's awesome. But outside of that, typically if something can go wrong, it will.
Uh-huh.
I've found. So, and I don't have the disposable income to just throw away my money on picking, you know, every time goal scored in this game, knowing that has now cursed them.
Right.
It just seems that way. So
you're a cooler.
I am a cooler.
You should get hired by.
No, I mean, we're working with them.
That is
so
true.
It's cool.
But they should like just install you at one of their casinos.
Exactly.
And you can just, you know,
Cool people off. Yeah, exactly. And that's actually how that's my sort of vibe in the dating world too.
Fair.
I'm a cooler. But yeah, no, it's I would say that just inherently because I just have horrible luck. And I know that if I pick, you know, in the cup final, if I pick Matthew Tkachuk every time goal scorer, he will get shut out for the rest of the series.
Right.
So I just, yeah, but that's one thing. Another thing too, and so I've always been a big proponent of, you know, if I ever ran for office, keep in mind I have a political science degree, American Constitutional Studies, so like at least I know some stuff about it. If I ever were to run for public office in either Canada, the United States, whatever, I would not put out any other policy platform. Like I wouldn't talk about, you know, like taxes or the budget or anything. My only policy platform would be as president or as prime minister, you get one legal punch per year.
Right.
It's like a mini purge.
Right.
Where you are allowed to punch one person consequence free in the face per year. If you punch another person, it is like harsh jail time.
Right.
Like it is very, but
like
I feel
20
like,
years.
Exactly. But I feel like it would be very therapeutic for all of us. So I will parlay this in my question. If you could have one legal punch on a celebrity, who would it be?
Legal punch
on
a celebrity.
And I want to say this is all fictional. And, you know, so we cannot be, you know, this is all fictional and we're just hypotheticalizing here.
Mm.
But if you could, Ryan, if you could have one legal punch on a celebrity,
legal punch on
who would
a celebrity?
It be? Living or dead?
Oh, okay.
Actually, you know what? Let's go Living.
I was going to
Let's go Living.
Yeah, the stakes are higher when they're Living. Who bothers me? I guess, probably like Elon Musk at this point. Stop messing with my Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say that, yeah. For me, it would be James Corden.
Okay.
I hate him so much. I have never, there is a ton of Reddit threads where, anytime there's a Reddit thread where it goes, people who have, met a celebrity in real life, what are they
right.
like? And there are always just heinous stories of James Corden treating waitstaff, treating just, any type of employee in establishment horribly. And then it contrasts with his public persona, where he's like, I'm James Corden. I'm, the nicest person ever.
Right.
And I just feel like he needs one, And I guess before we head out, our producer Connor reminded me as well, the World Championship happened.
Yes.
Canada took gold, but I think the story of the World Championship is Latvia winning bronze, and the entire country, for a bronze medal in the World Championship, put together a Raptors parade level. There's a national day of celebration now in Latvia for it. It's remarkable. We just want to give a shout out to that because it's amazing.
Latvia has always been a really great hockey country. And it is very satisfying to see their fan base get rewarded.
Absolutely.
The World Championship, it's a much bigger deal in Europe than it is over here because their domestic seasons have been done
long,
for a long time.
Yeah.
Whereas we're more focused on the Stanley Cup. I do like what both Team USA and Canada did this time. Team USA always brings a lot of youngsters, but with Canada bringing Adam Fantilli and then Adam Fantilli scoring a crucial goal for them, that was great to see. But yeah, Latvia, I think it's funny because it's they clearly have the community already and the grassroots and the fan base is amazing. So it's they don't need a Leon Draisaitl type superstar like Germany has, but it would be nice to see, a Latvian player that could take things to the next level. And, Artur Šilovs, the goaltender, Vancouver Canucks prospect, maybe he can become that guy after being MVP of the tournament. But to me, that's the interesting thing is with Latvian prospects, they all tend to be very grinding, workmanlike, very solid team structure. And then, at the NHL level, you'll get a Zemgus Girgensons, a Teddy Blugers, that sort of thing. But it would be interesting to see what sort of impact a Draisaitl, or Andre Kopitar versus Slovenia, what that might do for the Latvian hockey scene.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, on that note, next time we talk to you, we will be on the road and covering the Stanley Cup Finals. So that's a lot of fun. Hope you enjoyed it. It really is the best time of the year. Obviously, use BetMGM for all your betting needs. And we will see you next time.